Thank you for joining us for this podcast on the National Healthcare Decision Day, which is April the 16th, coming up here relatively soon. And joining me today is Jason Meredith, one of our lead planning attorneys for Thompson Associates. Jason, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Eddie.
So let me just set the tone here, Jason, for just a minute and describe what is the National Healthcare Decision Day, because it is important. It is to exist to inspire, educate, and empower the public and providers about the importance of advanced care planning. So this is something that really every organization should promote here during the month of April. While it's yet a little time off, we need to be thinking about what's the most important thing to do. By the way, it is a conversational project by the NHDD, and it exists in 50 states, and its purpose is very clear, to help us understand the importance of advanced planning and healthcare. So what I thought we'd do, Jason, if it's okay with you, since you're one of our lead planning attorneys for Thompson Associates, is to talk about why nonprofits should be concerned about this. And to begin with that, what is advanced care planning and why is it important for their donors?
Sure, Eddie. So, you know, when we talk about advanced care planning, it is a part of estate planning, as an overall part of estate planning. You know, I think when we hear the term estate planning, we always think of, okay, I need to put some planning in place so I know what will happen upon my death. What happens if I pass away, who my assets pass to, and things like that. But a large part of estate planning involves lifetime planning. What happens while you're living? And what we have found oftentimes is if someone becomes, an individual becomes incapacitated, that means they are unable to make decisions for themselves. And incapacity can show up in a number of different ways. I mean, maybe it could be something like Alzheimer's or dementia. It could be maybe someone's at a hospital and they're on pain medications and just not thinking clearly because of the medications. It could be a number of different things. But if an individual is ever in a situation where they are unable to make healthcare medical decisions for themselves, what happens in that situation? And if they haven't planned for that situation ahead of time, it's a very, very problematic. It's very problematic. What would happen at that point is someone on their behalf, usually a family member, would have to go to a court, go to a judge, and ask the judge to give them permission to make medical decisions for the incapacitated individual. And there's three big things here. Number one, the incapacitated individual has lost control over who makes those decisions. We're having a judge decide who that person's going to be instead of the individual choosing who that's going to be. It's an expensive court process, and it's a very time-consuming process. It literally could take 6 or 8 months to get a judge to put someone in that role. All along, the whole time, we don't have anybody making decisions for this individual regarding their health care. So an individual can deal with this situation ahead of time. And there's three basic documents that can be put in place. The first document is called a medical power of attorney. Some states will call it a power of attorney for healthcare. And it's really a very straightforward document. It basically says that if you are incapacitated, if you're in the opinion of a physician, unable to make the medical healthcare decisions for yourself, you can name another person to make those decisions for you. You can even name some successor agents. So if the first person can't serve, we can have an alternate person that can serve in that situation. And so now our individual has gained control over who is going to make those decisions. We don't have to go through a court, a judge, a long, time-consuming, expensive process. We immediately have someone there to make decisions in case this individual becomes incapacitated. So that's a very, very common document, very important to have. There's another document that kind of goes hand in hand with this. It's called a HIPAA authorization. And most people are familiar with the HIPAA. Anytime you go to a doctor's office these days, they always make you sign this HIPAA authorization. Basically, it's a federal law. Federal law says that medical providers are not allowed to release your medical information to anybody unless they have a written consent that says they can do that. Well, we'll go back to our medical power of attorney. All it does is names an agent to to make medical decisions for you. It doesn't necessarily say in there that that agent can have access to your medical information. So technically speaking, a doctor, a hospital could tell the agent, well, I know you can make medical decisions, but I'm sorry, I can't tell you anything about this person. that's not logical. And so to prevent that possible situation from arising, we think that not only should you have a medical power of attorney, you should have a HIPAA authorization that says your agent can have access to your medical information in order to make those medical decisions. So those two documents really go hand in hand. And then finally, there's a third document. The third document is called a directive to physicians. Sometimes you'll commonly hear it called a living will. And, you know, I'm not a physician, so in my layman's terminology, here's really how I describe this document. If you are at an end-of-life situation, basically there is nothing the doctors say they can do for you. There's no medical science or medical terminology or procedure. There's nothing the doctors can do for this individual. And this individual is now being kept alive on a artificial means, usually a ventilator or some machine, so to speak. You can say in this document that if that's the situation I'm in, then I am okay if those machines and that artificial support are removed. Essentially, it's a directive in a sense. You're basically telling the agent under your medical power of attorney, and you're telling your family members that if they are ever called upon to remove life support for you, you're okay with that decision, is what you're saying. It's to really help alleviate the guilt of making that kind of decision for a family member. And now the family member or the agent can say, hey, it's not me making the decision.
Right.
I'm just following this person's
right.
wishes.
Right.
So there's your three main documents that usually are involved with lifetime planning for healthcare.
Well, a comment and then a question, Jason. I think we often think about these type of documents for our parents or people who are older, but it's also important to have these type of arrangements for even younger. You have a situation, for example, where you have a child who's 21 and in college and they have an accident and they get to the hospital and the doctor cannot inform them because there's not a HIPAA agreement where the parents are listed. Or, you know, I think it's not just for older people.
It's a great point. I'm really, really glad you brought that up because it is commonly overlooked. And it's not until a parent finds themselves in that situation and they're calling the hospital and calling the doctor about their 19-year-old daughter or son, that when the parents realize all of a sudden, oh, wow, you can't talk to me? You know, and no one realizes that until they're in that situation. So that's a great point you made.
Second thing, take a minute, Jason, and describe the difference in the three documents you've so far talked about and a guardianship, because I think sometimes they all get confused.
It's a great question. So let's say we have an individual who's incapacitated who did not put these documents in place. They never signed a medical power of attorney or a HIPAA or anything like that. They've never designated an agent to make healthcare decisions. Now, someone, typically usually a family member, is going to go to court and ask the court to become the legal guardian of the incapacitated individual. And that guardianship proceeding is really what I was describing a few minutes ago. It is that court proceeding. And essentially you're going to the judge and you're saying, judge, this individual is incapacitated. They cannot make decisions for themselves. I want you to put me in that role. And that the reason this process is so long and expensive is that the judge wants to make sure that you are the right person to do this.
Sure.
And it's a very elaborate proceeding before we can finally convince a judge that this is the right individual to do these things for the incapacitated person. So
right, and a guardianship is not just limited to healthcare decisions either. I mean, it's much more complex than that.
That's true. Well, usually, a guardian becomes control of financial affairs also.
Everything. Mm-hmm. You know, why is this important to nonprofits? I think number one, this type of conversation is really important for a not-for-profit to, whether it's a healthcare organization or any other type of organization, to begin the discussion about the potential for planning with individuals. And so I see this as something, first of all, most of us are educational institutions one way or the other, and it's important to educate those who are our best supporters about these important topics because you know, you got to start that conversation somewhere. And it seems to me that makes a great deal of sense. What are your thoughts on that, Jason?
I do too. I think that, you know, these are documents that everybody needs. Okay. You know, sometimes we go back to this terminology of estate planning, and you know, a lot of people out there think, oh, estate planning is only for the rich and the ultra wealthy and things like that. And I don't need estate planning. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter what your net worth is. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or middle class. It doesn't matter. Everybody needs healthcare documents. And so it's a very easy way to start the conversation about estate planning and educating individuals, because everybody needs this. There's not anybody out there that doesn't need this.
That's exactly right. It's in our best interest as a not-for-profit to have those conversations. Right. Jason, thank you for today. This is very clear and concise, and I hope very helpful to individuals. We really appreciate Jason Meredith, one of the leading planning attorneys for Thompson Associates, his expertise. He is such a talented person. And Jason, we thank you for your time.
Well, glad to be here, Eddie. Appreciate it.
Everybody have a great rest of the day, and look forward to our future podcasts.